This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Call it like an intermittent episode because
sounds good.
Essentially what happened was we rolled out the idea that anyone could get their film reviewed on the podcast, and we had a lovely response to that. So much so that we had a bundle of Indian short films to review, and we thought rather than waiting and trying to fit them into other episodes, we're going to do this very special indie only episode. So all 5 films that we're going to review on this episode are shorts and indie films that have been submitted to us. They've asked us to review them, and some of them have been reviewed on the website already, so feel free to go to ukfilmreview.co.uk and check those out. But on this episode, there won't be any cinema releases or streaming or nostalgia, because we simply have too many fabulous indie films to review. So, Brian, you've seen all 5, yeah?
I have, yes.
Good mix here. It's a very mixed bag. Especially in terms of genres and storylines. So lots and lots to enjoy, I think.
Yeah.
And it's kind of definitely similar to where, if anyone was listening to us last year, we did the festival specials where we would review 5 films, and that was a great time. It was really good to just delve into these indie films and shine a light on them. Quite a few of the ones that we're reviewing tonight, or whenever you listen to this, they are available to watch. So that's what's quite different about when we did the festival one, was that those films probably weren't released yet. Whereas some of these, when we review them, you actually can potentially go and watch some of them. So I'm going to kick it off with a film that Chris Buick reviewed on the website and gave 4 stars. I am in agreement with Chris, as I am with many things. What a lovely guy. The Dogmatics, a documentary.
Yeah.
Now, let's hear your... sum it up for us first, Brian. What's this film about?
So directed by Rudy Charles and starring Boston indie band The Dogmatics. Yes, it's an indie film about an indie band. Now, I've called them indie, but they actually refer to a genre called Garage Rock 101. But I think we get the general vibe. This is a multi-purpose film. It's part promo video, part documentary, part tribute to co-founder and bass player Paul O'Halloran. So it provides a concise history of the band's origins, their inspiration and ethos. These guys didn't form a band to get famous or make loads of money. They just wanted to have a good time. And that is the best reason for doing anything in the world, to have a great time. Having said that, they toured with the Bangles at one point, so they did have quite a high profile. The band was struck by tragedy and disbanded in 1986. They've played live periodically since then, and in 2019 released new material. Now, to me, I love the feel of this film. It's a rough cut. It kind of falls in with their attitude, their outlook. It's rough and ready, and I like that. It's natural. They're down to earth. They're very likeable. The interviews with various members of the band are illuminating, and I love their stuff. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say I'd never heard of them previously, but unless you were into the Boston indie music scene in the 80s, you probably wouldn't have heard of them. But this is a great showcase for the band and what they've done. But I really, really liked it.
Yeah, I think I don't think you need to be embarrassed about not knowing them. I don't think they're a household name. Buick in his review said about this as well. You know, they're not a band you necessarily would have been that familiar with unless you were from the Boston area. Yeah. But yeah. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think the tone of the film completely matches the tone of the band perfectly. It's got that home footage sort of vibe. Yeah. It's got a kind of DIY feel to it as well.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not a band that are what's the word? They don't think a lot of themselves. You know what I mean? They don't put themselves on a pedestal.
They're very down to earth
guys.
There's no pretensions there,
but
is there?
Also on the side of it, it's not like they don't care either. They're very passionate about what they do in a way that feels almost wholesome and relatable. You feel like these are guys that you would happily sit and have a beer with and watch their show and go to it. Were you ever in a band, Brian? Were you ever in a band?
No. I didn't have the discipline to be in a band, not really. You know, being in a band means that you learn to play your instrument, whether it's bass, guitar, drums, whatever. You need that level of discipline, and I never had that. I love music, adore music, and I wish that I could have applied myself more, but no. No, not even close. Not really.
See, I was in a band. I was in a sort of punk band when I was in my teens early 20s. Okay. Yeah. And this felt really akin to the experience. Obviously, different like levels of success, shall we say.
But in
terms of the camaraderie, the family unit that these like band members create, the emotions, the highs and lows of what they had to go through. And obviously, with the Dogmatics, they had the tragedy of losing a band member. That's not the same for me. And I think he was related to one of the other band members as well.
The three brothers, weren't they?
So
the older brother played bass when they reformed.
And it was like they had this sort of unit. And, so a lot of those things came back to me when I was watching it. And I think I did feel quite strongly towards it because of it. It brought those feelings back for myself and, you know, the things that we've done. I love the fact that there was this element of them taking a nostalgic trip, like they were like remembering what happened, but they did have the footage to back it up as well, which was quite good. Sometimes you hear bands like they're telling the anecdotes, but it's not visually compelling because they're just kind of regaling you with that story. Whereas with this, they did try and tie it in. I think the filmmaker does really well, Rudy Childs, does really well to create the visual narrative alongside the narrative being given by the band members. Because I remember watching a few of these sort of rockumentaries, as it were,
and they
do come in very different calibers. Like sometimes you can watch a fabulous one, and then sometimes you feel like that was just footage that they've just strung together and hoped that you like the songs enough that you're not going to notice that it's not really a film. Yeah. With this, especially when you get the emotional moments that come with the loss, there was a depth to it. There was a depth to enjoy from a filmmaking point of view, not just from a music-loving point of view.
Yeah, it's authentic, isn't it? I think that's probably what you're alluding to there. You've got something to compare it to because you were in a band, but the fact that you can be so positive about it really validates it, doesn't it? I mean, I also like their music as well. I think it was very, I mean, they mentioned The Clash at one point as one of their influences. And I think it really shows because when I was listening to their music, I was kind of getting that post-punk new wave sound, late 70s, early 80s. And I thought they were very reminiscent of the Buzzcocks in places as well. And I like that. And that's why I probably felt slightly embarrassed I'd never heard of them, because it was that kind of style of music I was listening to when I was growing up, because that's when that sound was particularly prevalent. So, you know, it's good in that way as well.
Yeah, I'd love to point out the fact that they are on Spotify, the Dogmatics, and probably on the other streaming services. I checked out, because when I was watching the film, they kept talking about like their hit song, which was Thayer Street. And Thayer Street was where they lived in Boston, like a really rough part of the town.
Yeah.
And that song is super catchy. It's really catchy. And I liked it. I had a listen after the the film, and then I was like, I added it to a playlist. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I know. I tell you what, it's really good. It's really good stuff. I mean, Good Looking Girls, I think, was a good tune as well. Drinking by the Pool.
Drinking by the Pool. Yeah, there was a few. And I love the story. They're talking about Drinking by the Pool, and he was saying that they literally were playing like, you know, 5 feet away from the water. He said it's a bit dangerous with all the electrical gear.
I know. And they actually had footage of that, didn't they?
Yeah.
Of them being that close to the pool. And I think, like you said just now, that they can document their story with home videos, and it's all date stamps, and you can see it. You think, right, this is real. You know, none of this is contrived in any way. They sat down and they thought, right, we want to do something that plays tribute to our brother who we lost, but also provides a showcase for the band. And I think it does that. It really works on all levels. It really does.
I think we're going to just bit back to the tone side of things, and you mentioned the Clash and that sort of punk inspiration. Yeah. That when you hear about the living quarters, you know, they're being in this loft, there's like motorbikes everywhere, and it all felt very like anarchic. I got real kind of vibe of like the Young Ones. It felt like the Young Ones or like Bottom or something. Like that absolute rebellious spirit of just saying, you know, two fingers up to everyone. And I think that seeing them then regale this back, you know, obviously now is like, I mean, is it fair to say they're middle-aged? I don't know if they're middle-aged, but
I think,
I don't want to be rude, but, you know.
Well, no, it's fair to say, I think, really,
yeah. Bearing in mind they were popular in the 80s, so that gives you an idea. It's got a real lovely like time capsule feel to it that then you see it with this like modern, because they're still playing now and they're still doing music
still
now.
Playing,
that it's got, it's very charming. It feels like that's got a lovely nostalgia to it. That if you know that era and have like a passion for that era, like I do, I love the Clash. My dad was a huge fan of that music.
Yeah.
That it means a lot to people, but also. Yeah. The Boston accents, I love. It's so funny. It's like, I kept thinking I was listening to Mark Wahlberg. It's like,
they're very different, aren't they? Yeah, I know. It's very distinctive, isn't it? Yeah. And it's probably one of the few American accents to British ears that really stand out more, that are more distinctive, the Boston accents. So it's got that going for it. But what this will do, I mean, I hope it gets seen and it gets watched, because they deserve to find a larger audience. Because of their mentality and their outlook, and the fact that they're playing for the joy of it, and I love that. That's what I really like about it the most.
I think my favourite anecdote of the whole thing, though, was about the guy that they lived in such a rough area that they didn't bother locking the van because it would just get broken into, and that cost money to like get the locks fixed. Yeah. So they left it open. Then he's driving to work one day, the next day, and there's a hobo in the van.
That's right.
He's like, oh, get out.
That would scare you just a little bit, wouldn't
just
it? Really,
a little bit.
Hey, just a little bit.
But I think really great film. It's very accessible. You know, if you like music, or even if you just like that feel of your youth, you know, what you might have done in your youth, a group of friends, and you know, it has a real charm to it. And it's a film, it's a documentary that does, you know, pack in enough to make it worthwhile, because sometimes,
absolutely,
especially if people are very close to the subject, it can be like, oh, you know, is this more of like a, you know, piece of about you, and you know, but no, this doesn't, you don't get that. I think with this it's really more interesting than that.
Yeah. I don't think there's any padding either. There's nothing sort of superfluous in there. It's, it all seems essential to the story that they're telling. You know, that they do have a past and they have a present and a future now as well. Even though they are kind of recording sporadically, they're still bringing out EPs, they're still active. And as I say, I think it's a great advert for the band and what they do. And I'm sure they will discover many new fans. Well, they've got two new fans here by the sound.
Two new fans here. You and me. Well, yeah. Plus Chris, you know, who reviewed it as well. So,
oh, yeah, Chris absolutely. Yeah, Chris as well. Yeah.
The film, The Dogmatics, a documentary. I actually don't think is out yet as of recording this. It is scheduled for 2023 release, I think. And there's a website called thedogmatics.com/documentary where you can find out more about the film. And I'm guessing they'll keep people up to date with regards to a release date. But from what I can see, I don't think it is currently available to watch. But as I say, head to that website or even head to the UK Film website, check out the review, and then you can watch the trailer there, get an idea about the vibe. They probably have socials as well. I'm pretty sure they do. Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. So just follow them there. I'm sure they'll quickly let you know when it's available to watch.
It's a very good biography as well online. You know, that gives you more detail, more background on the band itself. So that's all helpful.
Absolutely. Moving on to a short film now. Again, reviewed on the website. This is titled Vax.
Hey, where you been?
Something happened at work.
I need a better explanation.
Not good enough.
Are you okay?
We had a breakthrough. A major breakthrough.
Something tainted that sample. Let's assume it's a viable candidate.
Malaria?
I think we have the vaccine.
We have no exposure.
I don't think we can ignore the opportunity.
And Jeff, no one finds out about this.
VAX. Brian.
Yes.
Give us the rundown on this one.
Right, okay then. So this short film is written and directed by Barak. I'm not sure of this name actually. Chippez?
That's why I let you do it. I was like,
I'm not sure about this.
I was going Chippez.
Chippez. Anyway, we apologise to Barak if we got that pronunciation wrong. Starring Cade Carradine and Rico Ross. Now, this is a very clever thriller that considers what might happen if scientists discover a vaccine that could save millions of lives, but could also damage profits for pharmaceutical companies. It opens with a montage of news reports, which gives it a contemporary feel and plugs into the recent pandemic. It's the blight of COVID-19 that makes this piece so frightening and powerful. Jeff, a medical researcher, is testing samples when he discovers an abnormal reading. His supervisor, Eric, is sure the sample is contaminated, but Jeff proves it can eradicate malaria. He soon discovers there is opposition to his discovery and a lack of interest in a vaccine that could make history. This is badged as a conspiracy thriller, but I think it's much more than that. It feels real. Pharmaceutical companies produce medicine for the greater good, but they are also in business, and there's nothing wrong with that. But there's a strong moral dimension here, so it is very thought-provoking, quite scary to watch, because it feels very close because of the implications that it has for the way we react to different illnesses. And probably what they've picked on their malaria is probably one of the most prevalent illnesses and conditions that endures throughout the world. And to think that if they found a cure for that, what would the knock-on effect be for the sale of medicines that combat malaria if it's not there anymore? So I think there's a fascinating moral dimension here, but it's very good. To fit that kind of detail into what, 12 minutes, I think is outstanding. So I really like this.
Yeah, I was very impressed by it. I liked all the moral dilemmas it was bringing up and letting them kind of swirl in this very intense atmosphere throughout. It's 12 minutes of a lot of tension.
Definitely.
You know, sort of good meaning scientist who understands what might happen because he's part of the machine, and then he talks over with his wife, and she's like, what yeah. you know, how could that be? Like, surely this is exactly why you're there. And I think obviously the timing of this film, everything that we've gone through with COVID and everything, and the huge rift that no one could have seen coming between the idea of people for and against vaccines, like I don't think anyone predicted that you know, a film like that is really important, like, to, you know, to get in there and talk about this division and talk about, you know, what's going on behind these closed doors, and then also to tie in this element of we are reliant on these huge companies that make tons and tons of money to essentially decide whether or not something is rolled out or not. You know, because at the end of the day, something might be killing people, but we don't want it to kill their profits, I think is kind of a similar way that they phrase it on the IMDb description. And I think that's a really powerful genesis for a short film. I did feel, and I think Patrick, who reviewed it, put this in his review, that the ending was a bit sudden, and I felt that this was could have been more of a proof of concept for a bigger film. Did you get that kind of feeling?
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, I think we've spoken about this before, haven't we, really? That the fact that you've got a limited amount of time, and that you do need to encapsulate a story in, if it's 10 minutes long or 12 minutes long, whatever, you need to encapsulate a story in maybe 10 scenes. And that is not easy to do. And pacing is everything in a short movie. And it's very difficult to do. I think it's a hell of a skill for a director to be able to create an end-to-end story in such a short space of time. And yeah, it did seem a bit abrupt. You felt like it could have done with another half an hour maybe. Which still kind of makes it a short film, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think it just more of the company. I love this idea of this like sinister company, and maybe there being more to it, more players, more things going on, and yeah, obviously what the outcome was for our protagonist and things like that.
But no, it's very good though. I was really impressed with it. But you know, it's no bad thing when they leave you wanting more, and that's always a good sign for any short film.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that I didn't get from the first watch until I sort of went back over it was, you know, the news bit at the beginning. And obviously it's like the Bush or George W. Bush era and focusing on Iraq and weapons of mass destruction. And then also all these other issues that are plaguing mankind, malaria being one of them. And I thought that was really powerful. Like, again, a big point that could have maybe been explored more about our focus on things and what takes our focus, when the fact that you've got something that is killing millions of people, it just is. And then you've got, you know, these other political decisions and where we spend our time and money. And I think the film does well to raise all these big issues, but whether or not I think it fully evolves them is up for discussion, because I think it did need more if you're going to talk about that sort of stuff. But it does set the tone of the film really well, because it is very much a case of, look, we're dealing with some pretty big topics, and we're also dealing with potential, you know, corruption and misdeeds of people in power. So I think it's a very strong film. The performances are very good. I love the theme. I love the story. I just wanted more of it. I think that's all I can really say. I wanted more of it.
Yeah, it's very polished. And the montage, the news clips at the beginning, was really important to the film overall, because it sets it all up. And the, you know, the problem, the issues they're dealing with, have always been there. I think that, you know, it's always been this kind of push and pull between business, between government doing the right thing, doing it for the people, making sure that the right medicine gets out there to treat various conditions, you know. And we always hope that in the pharmaceutical industry, they're always going to be ahead of the curve now, because after the pandemic, after COVID, we want them to be ahead of the curve. And you might have noticed in the news a couple of days ago, or it might have been today even, that they're already working on a vaccine to treat the next pandemic or the next equivalent to COVID. And to me, it all ties in with that. It's with us. This dilemma, this moral conundrum is with us, and it always will be with us. And this is what this film exposes, you know, that there's a lot of ambiguity there. And we just hope that people in power do the right thing.
There you go. So that was
very good, though.
Very good. I hope that we have been able to sort of shine a light on this one as well as we can. Mm-hmm. Again, another one not actually out for release. I know I said at the beginning of this podcast that people could watch these films, but unfortunately we've started with two that you can't. But there is a website, again, vaxthefilm.com, or you can follow them on all the socials. They're pretty much universally known as Vax the Film. So VAX the Film. And stay up to date, because I'm sure once it's available, they'll let you know. And you can head to the website, ukfilmreview.co.uk, and read the review. And also, Patrick did his own video review of the piece. So you can watch that if it sounds something that you want to watch.
Spoil for choice.
I know. We have tried to cover that film quite a lot, so that's good. That was Vax. Moving on now to an indie feature film, The Korean from Seoul.
I'm William Now. Welcome to Chandler-Dale Export.
Hi, I'm Cliff Knoll. I work for Chandler-Dale Exports.
My name's Erin Grass Forbes, and I'm in charge of analysing supply and demand.
We have a multicultural team here at Chandler-Dale Exports, which can be proven just by drawing attention to our foreign relations manager, Chin Ling.
My name is Chin Ling, and I work for Chandler-Dale Exports. I'm a Taiwanese girl, and I love brand names.
Welcome to Australia. I think it's important to show racial diversity in a team environment, because that's what they do on the television.
If somebody tells me that I'm just a waste of space for the economically viable, I tell them they need to face reality. I don't care if they're white, East Asian, Middle East and Nepalese, or any of the others.
Security is an issue we take very seriously at Chandler-Dale Exports. We only hire the finest people for the job, like Nam Hong from Seoul, Korea.
So you're really from Seoul?
I am from Seoul.
Nam Hong, I don't know if you know, Chandler-Dale Exports at war. Force of darkness, they're closing in. Nam Hong, we need to take control of the situation. Because of the severity of the situation, Nam Hong, I've tripled your security budget. It's time to take it up a notch. He's staring right at you. He's staring right at him. You'd be hard-pressed to find another director who wouldn't freeze in the face of these raging currents. Set an example to the others.
One more step! Ready for it? Ready for it? Chandler-Dale Exports!
Darkness is coming.
My notes on this film are all over the place, and I think it's because the film is all over the place. is that fair to say? You know,
I would say so.
Jason reviewed this on the website, and I think he certainly seemed to get the vibe of it, that it is it's a wacky film. It's a comedy / drama, but essentially it's to do with a character who moves to Australia to become the head of security for this export company called Chandler-Dale. This guy, the head of security, Nam Hong, is actually troubled himself. He sort of drinks a lot and seems to randomly go off and play guitar in the streets. But he's hired to find out what's going on in this company, because there seems to be an issue, and it kind of transpires that certain people that work there are good for nothing, and there's certain things going on. And there's a bit about cereal being added to the trains. And this is where my notes start to really trail off, because I did very much struggle to keep up with it.
Yeah.
What else was I missing there, Brian?
Well, you see, look, I think like you, I didn't really understand what the film was getting at. There were lots of interesting ideas going on there, but I couldn't see what it was trying to say, because there is a message in every film that's made. And they're kind of bordering on surrealism, which is fine, but it has to be accessible. It has to be complete enough for you to draw a reasonable conclusion on what's going on. And at first, I thought it was making a statement about capitalism, corporate giants exploiting a compliant workforce. But then the Nam Hong, the head of security, he kind of begins falling over chairs, then he's busking, and then it turns into a pop video for a couple of minutes, and it goes back again. I mean, some of the scenes were well shot. The scenes on top of the train, I think, were pretty decent, but I don't understand what those conversations were really meant to signify, particularly when one of them was eating cereal while they were talking on top of a train,
yeah,
a speeding train. I didn't get that. So there's a lot of activity going on there. And as I say, to be surreal is fine, right? You know, Jason mentioned in his written review that...
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You know, it had a touch of the David Lynch's about it, and I could see what he's getting at. But I think there was more clarity in the way David Lynch would approach a film, because it just gives you enough. It needs to give you something, right? I don't mind working for my entertainment up to a point, but when they make it so impenetrable, then I start to lose track of it. You know, so there were just too many, and you know, you look at surrealism, and it is about juxtaposition of certain images and scenes, but they have to bear some resemblance to each other, and I kind of got lost, really.
Yeah, and I think because the film was doing this dual tone of comedy and drama, that it could not sustain the comedy at all. A lot of it I didn't actually find very funny. Like you mentioned a bit about him tripping over the chairs. Yeah. And I could imagine... I've been in screenings before where they're like cast and crew screenings, because for some reason they've invited me along to sort of them.
Yeah.
And... the atmosphere in those is like they're all laughing at all the bits because they remember what it was like to film it and they loved it and it's their mate and all this sort of stuff. And I'm sat there thinking, yeah, but you guys don't understand this. To an outside audience, this isn't funny. Like we don't get the joke. And when I was watching this, I was like, I can imagine them thinking that, oh, this is really funny. Like, yeah, just keep doing it. Oh, yeah, it's really funny. And I was watching it thinking, okay, the professional in me is going to keep watching, but the film watcher in me really wants to just skip. I want to skip ahead this bit. And the same was said for, like, because I think the score was done by the filmmaker as well, Stephen Watmore, who's in the film. But there's this bit with horns, or quite a lot of bits with horns in, and I just found it was grating against my skin. I was like, I just wanted it to finish.
It's a bit like white noise.
Yeah,
it
really was. And I think the film's, like, plus column isn't long enough to, you know, excuse the con column. And when, you know, I want to pick out some of the good stuff. There were some randomly funny bits, like with the guy he's in the bin and he's talking to the guy in the bin. I thought that was quite funny. It kind of felt a bit like Mighty Boosh or Flight of the Conchords or something like that.
Could be that sort
of thing. And also there's some genuinely like interesting filmmaking. There was a bit where he just crashes his car into the bin. and then just carries on. There's loads of traffic going on around them. I'm like, there's no way they shut the streets off. So I think he just did that. And I was like, do you know what? Fair play. But there's those moments, but I would say the majority of the film, audiences are going to be spent in just clear befuddlement, not knowing what's going on. And because they're not being presented with funny enough gags, I don't think the enjoyment factor is there to sustain this length of film, because it is an hour and a half. I think it could have easily been about half an hour, and that would have been more than enough.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, actually.
So, and if you're going to do these funny, weird gags, that's fine, because you don't need to string it together. But to keep them going for an hour and a half, it's like you've got to have some kind of narrative at some point that comes in. And it's interesting that you and Jason mentioned Lynch, because I do find Lynch films sometimes hard to penetrate. I must say, I like, I get told they're great, I get told they're lovely, and not lovely, but I watch them and I sometimes don't get them. And it took me quite a few views of like Blue Velvet and stuff to actually kind of like it. So it could be that something like Korean from Seoul will have a great audience. You know, people that like that sort of surrealist, absurdist, comedy dramas, you know, maybe that's, which I don't think Lynch is really, he's not really known for doing comedy, right? It might be dark comedy, I guess, but it's it's more sort of thrillery kind of territory. But with this, I think that the audience is going to be very, very niche.
I think so. This type of film will have, all films have an audience somewhere, you know, there will always be somebody that will enjoy a film like this and get a kick out of it. But I think it needs to make its mind up what it wants to be, because it, on occasion, it just felt like a series of sketches that didn't really bear any relationship to each other. And as you say, a lot of them weren't very funny. And so there was nothing to hold your attention there. And then you start looking for something coherent, linking them, these images together. And I just wasn't finding it. I don't think you were, by the sound of it, really.
And it, you know, because sometimes when these films come along, I'm always very conscious of like, okay, that's how I felt. But, you know, every reaction has an opposite and equal reaction, right? There could be people that absolutely love it. And you get these cult films and films that just people find so funny because maybe they are just wacky and zany, like The Room and stuff like that. But I think with something like this, it's missing coherence to the point of it, everything else just falls apart. Nothing sticks. Nothing kind of gels enough for you to go, oh, do you know what? That bit was really good and that bit was really funny and it's quotable. And I think maybe, you know, if you watch it five times, it would be. But if I challenge anyone to watch this five times, unless it's really your bag.
Yeah, it's not an easy watch. But for those who are into this type of film, you know, they'll get something from it that maybe we didn't. You know, so that's only reasonable to point out, and it is about opinions at the end of the day. But it just didn't quite click for me.
That's fair enough. And ironically enough, it's the first one that we've reviewed on this show, on this episode, that you can watch if you want to. Yeah. I know we haven't necessarily sold it great, but I do think, you know,
it's a shame, though, isn't it?
As with anything, you know, if you can deduce from our review that it might be something that you will like, please do go and watch it, because I know the filmmakers will be really chuffed with that. It should be available, it says, on Amazon Prime and Tubi, but I think those will depend on what region you're in. When I go to IMDb, it's telling me it's on plex.tv, plex.tv. So you'll be able to find out somewhere where you can watch it, I think. If not, do either get in touch with us or find the filmmakers online and you can ask them. But that is The Korean from Seoul 2021. Moving on now to another short film, fourth in this episode, or fourth film, called Torn. And I don't think we have a review of this on the website. I think there's another film called Torn that we've reviewed.
Okey-dokey.
So unless it's been overwritten, let me get back to you on that. But Brian, do you want to sum this one up?
Yeah, of course. So this is a short film directed by Colby Cyrus, starring Colby Cyrus, Andrew Medeiros, and Eden Tuckman. So this is a very compact and highly charged drama. It begins with the suicide of Nora and jumps to the funeral where husband Corey and lover Emmett meet for the first time. Recriminations soon start to fly. Who was ultimately responsible for this tragedy? The narrative then flips back to show how these two relationships developed in parallel. So we have the classic triangle with Nora at the apex. The present is in colour and the past is essentially black and white, but you actually get shades of blue and grey. That heightens the visual effects, for sure. But overall, a very good film. You know, as we said previously, pacing is everything in a short feature. I think they paced it so well. And it gives that kind of feeling of completion. And you see how those two relationships develop. And they do it over a short space of time. That's what impresses me about this, is that they make it reasonably complete enough for you to draw conclusions. And you see enough of these two relationships and what the fallout of it is. So, very good. I liked it.
Yeah, I was very impressed by it. I'm always a bit worried when films start kind of shaky. In terms of, you can tell it's not the highest of budget films that you're watching.
No.
And then they're going to pull in this really kind of dramatic storyline where you're going to also then flip backwards and forwards. But I thought it was handled really well. It actually comes across far more professional than I think the budget gives it credit for. And I actually got a lot out of it. I think I got a lot out of the film, especially once we see more of the married couple and their sort of backstory and what was going on there. It's something that you don't often get as well in a short film so much, because you've got three kind of quite important characters. You obviously got the two men, and you've got the wife slash well, she wouldn't be a mistress, would she?
We're talking definitions there, aren't we?
But you get these big sketch characters that are actually well delivered and well thought through. I liked it. I like the way that they told the story, because sometimes flashbacks can be a bit jarring, but I think you kind of needed that with this film. Some of the technicals are a bit distracting, like the sound was a bit off at times and there's some sort of wobbly cameras, but I don't think it goes that much against it. I think it just obviously we look for these sort of things, but I don't think the bulk of audiences are going to necessarily notice. There was some flashback music that was a bit twee. I thought it was a bit kind of sort of thing. But it was, and it had that potential, like I said, the tone when we first watch it, to fall into like soap opera kind of territory, but it doesn't. It stays very much in the kind of drama era, I think.
I think, look, the budget was limited, to be fair. It obviously was, but it makes it an even greater achievement when you look at what they did manage to get in the can and the story they managed to tell. What I particularly liked about it, though, was that you had the scenes at the funeral when they were having the wake, and Corey was just holding it all together, being polite to people, saying thanks for coming and all that kind of thing. Then he sees Emmett standing outside smoking a cigarette, and then he just completely loses it, right? And I think that is real. That kind of feels real. You can imagine that happening. And he knows who he is, even though they've never really crossed swords previously. He knows who he is, and now he's confronting him, probably on the worst possible day that he could do it. But that is life. It's a slice of life, isn't it? What you see there can and does happen.
Yeah, I thought the performance is very good. I have found the review, by the way, that it was reviewed by Jason. Right. It's because it's, as I say, there's another film of the same name, so the search was getting confused. But if you search Torn 2023, you'll be able to see Jason's review. He gave it 4 stars, and I think that's right. I think it is a strong short film. It's one of those ones that I'd recommend. People can
Absolutely. I think 4 stars is a fair rating within its field, within the field of short films.
Yeah.
I think it deserves 4 stars, definitely.
And also, I mean, you could easily see a film with this plot strung out for a feature length, but I think the potency of this film is just right. Like, we've had obviously a few films today where the running times were probably off. Like, we wanted more from Vax and less from the Korean from Seoul. With Torn, I think it's about bang on, really. I think I got what I wanted from it, and I was satisfied with what was delivered, definitely.
Yeah, no, I think it more or less hits the mark, and it's very difficult to do. You know, what always strikes me about any short film, let's say the average length of a short film is, I don't know, 12, 13 minutes, and that is not a lot of screen time, really, to tell what is a coherent story, and it's not easy to do. Again, I'll say it again, I'll stress, pacing is everything in a short film. But they did it really well. It kind of works. And same thing with Vax as well. Although, as you say, probably with Torn, you had enough there. With Vax, you just want to see a bit more. That had slightly more dynamic potential, I guess, Vax. But both very good films.
Yeah. Happy with both those. Not available online. But if you go to Colby Cyrus's Instagram, I'm sure he'll keep you up to date with what's going on. So it's /Instagram.com/ Colby Cyrus or at Colby Cyrus. I think it's the type of film that people should look out for and support, because a lot of love seems to have gone into the movie, and the performances, the tone, and the storyline being delivered in the way that it was, it just is very good filmmaking. It's the kind of film that would have fit perfectly into the festival, like when we were doing that last year.
Yeah, sure, it would have.
Happily screened out alongside some of the other great films that we had. So, do check it out as and when that comes out. Do go to the website and read the review, because it is there. Poor Jason, I've fixed the search, he is there. It's the 2023 Torn, you'll see on there. There isn't a trailer on there, unfortunately. I don't know if they have a trailer. I can't see one on the IMDb or anything like that. So you will just have to listen and read our words. That's all you get so far.
Yep.
So that's Torn. Last film to be reviewed in this episode is a feature length, and it's Choir Girl.
This is voyeurism and exploitation. You waited and you photographed people at their most vulnerable.
Where I come from, this stuff happens every day. I didn't cause it.
Eugene?
Polly.
Why her?
She just seems like someone you'd want to save.
And she is the one for the viewer. Can you get more images?
Josephine.
And if we get this photo in this magazine.
This is exactly what we need. If we take these to an exhibition, the publicity will come to us.
Yeah.
Now, this was actually the first one I watched out of the batch.
Me as well. Strange.
Yeah, I think because of the order I put them down, but actually wanted to save it for last because I think potentially one of the best films, indie films that we've reviewed. I certainly really, really liked it. Maybe not feel the same on the other side, but Choir Girl, go for it.
Right, okay. So this film's from Down Under, an Australian film, directed by John Fraser, starring Peter Flaherty, Krista Vendi and Sarah Timm, shot in black and white. Eugene is a carer for his elderly father, but is also a budding photographer. Eugene favours the dark side of inner city life. The opening frames feature pictures that are both disturbing and compulsive. A boy punching a syringe into his arm. An old lady being attacked. Sex workers playing their trade. He takes the photos to a lifestyle magazine called Slipstream. They find the photos offensive and voyeuristic. Eugene argues it's life and it's only what's happening in his own neighbourhood. However, junior editor Polly thinks different. She feels they're challenging with a strong human interest angle. So I really enjoyed this. It raises an interesting moral conundrum, a bit like Vax in some ways. Should we cancel images of life and pretend they don't exist? Or do we confront what we know is happening? And the answer should be yes, but is it really what people want to see in the media? You're never entirely certain what Eugene's true motivation is. I suspect he is something of a voyeur, but there's a lot of ambiguity there. A very good film. Very good film. It's disturbing, it's alarming. It's not pleasant to watch, but it is life. And the essence of that character, Eugene, played by Peter Flaherty, is to say, well, look, you know, what am I doing that's so wrong? And it kind of fits in with the cancel culture that we're dealing with at the moment. Do we pretend that things aren't happening in life when they really are? And of course, the editor, Polly, sees the potential there and that this is art. This is life as art. And that's the essence of the film, that, you know, we can't ignore it. We can't, how do you address something if you're not going to accept it's happening? And a very good film.
Yeah, I think I really enjoyed this a lot more than other people seem to be, because it's got a very low rating on IMDb, which I don't think is fair at all. It's got 4 out of 10. And I think,
well, that's a bit harsh.
I think it's because it's the type of film that is genre specific. You know, it's a bit of a darker film. It is a thriller. And I'm not sure if people are maybe going in with the wrong impression. But quite early on, you get the tone. You know, you get it sets its stall out, and you know that this is a film that's dealing with very dark themes, and it's got troubled characters. I think it's delivered very, very well. Yeah. And for me, the sort of major theme that it was bringing up was this idea of exploitation, because there's a lot of that going on in different ways and from different people. And it's this idea of, you know, saints and sinners, but actually it's all pretty grey when you look at it, and when you get down to it, and we're all animals and we're all creatures of habit and we all have urges and we all have things that we do that, you know, create situations, and, you know, we put our morality on it, but often it's things which just happen, or they culminate because of all different kinds of things. Funny enough, we've reviewed this twice on the website, because Jason's reviewed it, and I think Mad Wolf reviewed it as well. And Jason gave it 4 and Mad Wolf gave it 3. So it does kind of give you an idea that it can divide a bit, and it can elicit maybe different reactions. But it's a very solid film. I felt that it was professionally made. It felt the part. It felt like it was, you know, giving a very good experience for the viewer. It had this sort of vibe of, like, you know, it's obviously in black and white. The tone of it was like a mystery thriller, I guess. And I don't know, I really immersed myself into it. I thought it was great.
I was really impressed with it. I think the you've hit on it, really. Exploitation is a central theme in the film, and it's just saying that life is a gray area. You know, one side of life, 10% is white. The other end of life, 10% is black. But another 80% is grey, you know. And can we moralise? Can we judge?
It's the kind of film that I think that gets really under the skin of its characters. And it's not holding back from playing in areas that maybe the audience aren't comfortable with or familiar with. You know, like you said about Eugene, we're not 100% sure of his motives. There is one scene which I'm 100% not going to talk about, because it's quite near the end of the film, but I think you might know the one that I mean,
right?
Where I'm not sure they needed to show everything as for long as they did.
I know what you're talking about.
I found that almost impossible to watch. I had to turn the TV down. I'm not sure I can keep watching this, but but even though I really didn't enjoy that bit, it was almost vital to the film, because it is talking about this idea of, you know, should we look away or should we not look away? You know, should we lift the stone and see what's underneath, you know, really look at ourselves in the worst possible light, because actually we are characters and in our own dramas and in our own making, and we live in a culture that's trying to be civilized, in inverted commas, but often that is at odds with what people really want to do and what they end up doing. So it's a film that's bold, and it does bold things. And I feel that it's challenging audiences in a good way, not like kind of annoying them. It's doing it in a way that's actually like dramatically proficient. There's a few bits where I feel like it does sort of let itself down. Like, I don't know, there's a bit where he kind of gets barreled into a van, or he gets like beaten up or punched or something. And it, I don't know. I don't think they were quite capable of handling those scenes without it looking a bit clumsy. Like, it looked a bit, you've not quite nailed that one for me.
Yeah.
But to be honest, it really didn't spoil it. Like, the whole foreboding, sinister atmosphere of the whole piece, really got on board with it. I thought Kramerick was great. Performances were great. It's definitely a film that you come away thinking a lot about. You're like, wow, that you can't not be affected by it, really.
No, of course not. But then again, though, that's proof that the film has truly worked. The particular scene you're talking about, I agree with you that it probably wasn't needed in some ways, but it was just trying to hammer home a point that they're living in a very dark world and dealing with certain people who have nothing in the way of morals or scruples, that anything is possible, anything can happen. And it is a question of whether we feel we need to know what's happening in this kind of underbelly, you know, a secret world that we prefer not to know about, not to learn about. And that's what when he was pitching these photos to the editor of the magazine, she was more or less saying, people don't want to see this.
Mm.
But Eugene's saying, it's life, it's happening. Whether I take these pictures or not, it's happening. And I think he's basically right. So the message that comes through there is true. We need to know a bit about this. Now, there's no point in pretending it doesn't happen, because we don't live in a pink marshmallow world, do we? And it's, so I think for that reason, it works for me.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it definitely works. It's a film that holds together incredibly well. It came out in 2019, so it's been out a while. But I like you say about it being still relevant, even with like council culture and everything that's going on now, and the sort of fickle nature of what we see versus what's the reality. I think it's a really interesting point. Yeah, it is a hard hitting film. I think, like I said, it's got a poor overall rating. I don't think that's fair on IMDb.
No, but I think
that could be people going in and not quite understanding that this is a very affecting film. It's an 18, and it definitely needs to be an 18. It's not something to sort of go in lightly with, but it is very good. I think it's worth a watch, and it is one you can watch. It's on Prime, it's on Apple TV in the UK and Google Play. There is a Linktree. I'm not sure how familiar everyone is with Linktree, but it's basically a holding page where it's got loads of different links that you can go off to. So it's linktr.ee/choirgirluk. Or if you search Choir Girl, I'm pretty sure you'll find it. But it's on all the sort of big platforms, and it's an hour and a half or hour 45. So you get a good film. It doesn't overstay its welcome, apart from that one scene that I did feel like, okay, yeah, I've done this now. But the majority of that film is very thrilling, very interesting, well made, and brings up a lot of important and powerful themes that, loads to discuss if that's your bag. But do go in, obviously, understanding the dark nature of it.
Yes. Absolutely.
But that's your lot for the episode. That's the five that we were going to review on our indie special. So just to recap, you had The Dogmatics, a documentary, very good documentary. Vax, short film about the malaria vaccine. The Korean from Seoul, baffling indie film, but maybe it's your absurdist treat for the month if you want to seek that one out. Torn. Really, really good short film and drama. And very interesting. And do check out the review online. And Choir Girl, available to watch on some of the big platforms. And a really interesting film. Funny enough, actually, of all the films, I'd say that was probably the most Lynchian, wouldn't you?
Now you mention it, it probably is.
Yeah, really, really getting into that kind of seedy, dirty kind of world, and it has that feel to it.
It explores the dark side, doesn't it?
It does.
I think you're right, actually.
There you go. This has been UK Film Club with me, Chris, and Brian, my lovely co-host, who has very kindly jumped into these films amidst watching all the next movies for our next episode. How's that going, Brian? You watched them all yet?
Well, I'm working on it. Let's put it that way. But you see, you always give me films to watch that have got a prequel. I've got to watch the prequel, haven't I, before I watch the sequel. You know, you put me in that position, I've got to do it. It's just there. It's winking at me. It's talking to me, and I have to watch, you know. But it's always very enjoyable. It's nice to perform this particular service for our listeners.
Yeah.
To give some idea and some steer on what's out there. I think the standard of indie movies that we're starting to see now are generally very high. They really are. And I think there's less of a gap. And when you look at what they do with the budget they have available, it's quite an achievement. I think
so too. And I think, you know, you get people that are becoming very good at multiple roles because they have to be. But because of the accessibility of things, they can do it to a very good standard. And we've seen some great examples of that tonight, and there's more to come, I'm sure. If anyone listening does have a short or indie film they want us to review on the podcast, you can do that at our website, ukafilmreview.co.uk/podcast. And there's an option there. Whether you've had your film reviewed or not, there's two different options. We are able to review it here, and we'll basically fit the films in as we can, either into the main episodes, or we'll do extra bonus episodes like this, because it's worth shining a light on the amazing work you guys all do.
Absolutely.
So yeah, thank you very much. Thank you to Brian for being here as always. And
pleasure.
Thank you to the listeners. This has been UK Film Club. We'll see you again next time.
Bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.